And now we're very pleased to have Aaron Parkhurst, also engaging from the international perspective in this agenda. And at somewhat short notice, and on behalf of his professorial colleague, I understand that these are all relevant factors. Thank you.
So, I think it becomes an easy thing to voluntarily confirm the authority of the expanding biomedical canon. How this is accomplished socially is, however, far more delicate. The process of Western academic biomedical inquiry within hospitals, laboratories, and other research institutions requires a type of socially constructed empiricism. The findings and the disseminated peer-reviewed publications of biological, cellular, genetic, and molecular mechanisms provide data that is marketable and reproducible. One of the problems with such a system is that when a particular piece of biomedical truth is so mechanistically robust, one might assume that the epistemologies that pervade the understandings of such systems are equally robust, that the pathway that leads from scientific fact to social knowledge is linear, and it is not. I'd like to share a few of my reflections on my fieldwork in Southeast Arabia to illustrate this point and hopefully to raise a few issues. So about 10 years ago, the topic of genetic susceptibility of diseases began to crop up in local discourse in the Arabian Gulf. And it sort of spread like a wildflower. In order to combat consanguinity and type 2 diabetes specifically, various political and scientific groups tried to show how they were linked. The product became the discourse on the Arab genome. The idea was to try to educate locals that they had a genetic susceptibility to certain conditions, specifically type 2 diabetes. And through this education, health groups wanted locals to understand that they had a greater responsibility to control their habits, their diet and their exercise, and to be more cognizant of their increasingly sedentary lifestyles that lead to lower health outcomes. So with the backing of the sheikhs, the concept of genes as carriers of disease was quickly absorbed into indigenous systems of knowledge. Major news publications, specifically Gulf News, The National, Al Jazeera, and local incarnations of BBC and CNN, frequently cite studies on the Arab genome. And the knowledge was even recited in mosques during Friday prayers. Friday sermons are state-sanctioned. In the Emirates, and are often written by the ruling sheikhs. They are both the religious and political authorities of the country. Research in the Gulf on the Arab genome is often cited as the country's greatest contribution to biomedical science, and the Center for Arab Genomic Studies receives various awards on a regular basis. They give them to themselves. The campus in which it is located is itself called the Sheikh Hamdan bin Rashid Al Maktoum Award. He's the son of the ruling sheikh. For medical sciences due by UAE. And this naming construct and these awards are very typical of the unique rhetoric of the country, but they are also indicative of the role of performance and presentation of scientific knowledge. So the science is decontextualized, and this has had unintended consequences. So I'll share a couple examples. The first is an interview with one of my informants, named her Safra here, is not her real name. But that she's an Australian Muslim woman. She's a professional dietitian and a nutritionist for a clinic in Healthcare City. This is a German-run center in Dubai. So she's recently left her position at another clinic. And the official reason was that the clinic had no money, so they needed to let some staff go. But she actually volunteered to leave. She says, I quote her, "I hated it there and I hated my boss. We couldn't be honest with anybody. The locals figured out that genetics might contribute to developing diabetes. So everyone thought they knew more than me and I wasn't allowed to correct them. Somebody would call my boss, and he would never defend us. They would call him and tell him, we told this woman that our problems are genetic, and she doesn't know anything. What are you going to do about it? So she says her boss, we would just sit there and apologize. A few patients demanded that she be fired and her colleagues be fired, or they'd have the medical license revoked because they didn't like what she had told them. So, and they have the power to do that. So she says, I mean, most of my clients are really lovely people, even if they don't listen to me. Most of them do. But I never know who I'm going to offend and who I'm not. So my boss pulled me into his office one day and told me to tell certain types of patients that their problems were genetic. And she says, it isn't right. He basically told me not to tell locals that they need exercise and healthy food. I'm a nutritionist. That's the entire purpose of my job. In the end, I was so fed up, I just left. He pulled me into the office. He said, tell them what they want to hear or you'll get deported. And she would have. You lose your employment visa and get deported. So before I arrived in Dubai, I didn't expect such a strong positive response to the influence of genetic susceptibility for disease. But the more I spoke with locals about illness, the more it became clear that there was an expanding understanding of genetics as profoundly influential in determining health among the indigenous population. Furthermore, there was a relative eagerness among the locals to discuss genetics. I found it rare, however, to hear of the Western concept of genetics being discussed in terms of appearance, demeanor, strength, or any traits other than illness. That is not to say that there isn't a strong knowledge system of heredity among Gulf Arab nationals. On the contrary, most people I spoke to seem to have quite solid convictions of how parents passed on traits to their children. These convictions don't always mirror Western knowledge systems. I've argued elsewhere that these particular perceptions of hereditary mechanisms in the Gulf, while somewhat Mendelian in nature, are a break from Darwinist evolutionary models and are rather a sort of return to what I call cultural Lamarckism, where the building blocks of future generations are determined pro rata to the physical effects of the lived experience of the parents. The repercussions for this cultural viewpoint are manifest in social practice, where women are encouraged to fix physical flaws before becoming married or having children so that their children don't absorb the undesirable physical features from the unaltered parent. Such alterations include nose surgeries, skin whitening, among other cosmetic changes. So the social motivation is that if a woman can lighten her skin before she has children, that her children will then have lighter skin naturally, ignoring the possibility of such traits as embedded in genes. So my fieldwork evidence suggests that genes and genetics are, rather, perceived as agents of causation for many illnesses and medical conditions among Gulf locals. Genes are thought to be inherent to an individual, untreatable and invisible. So the phenomenon I wish to bring to light is that while many locals have readily accepted Arab genetics as a deterrent to their well-being, rates of consanguineous marriages and the propagation of these genes are steadily increasing. It's one of the only places in the world where inter-cousin marriages are still increasing. This is true, actually, across the Muslim world, where it's all decreasing, except for Qatar and the Emirates.
3 minutes.
So while there exists a robust local knowledge of the mechanisms of inheritance and kinship in local Arabia, which I haven't the time for here, genes as biological entities are not part of and not associated with this inheritance and kinship. Genes are widely known as identity markers, independent of kinship. They are widely known to be carriers of disease, but are not often understood to contain the essence of, or the benign traits of a person. Consider the example of hair color versus diabetes. So another conversation I've had with some of my interlocutors, a group of local men. A woman's hair comes from her mother, and that is why they are keeping it like this, and they mean silky and pitch black. So what about diabetes, I asked. Is this something that comes from the mother or from the father? No, this one is genetic. So I continued, sure, but do you get it from your mother's side of the family, or does it come from your father's side? So no, these diseases are genetic. They're fine, but where does it come from, I persist. No, they don't come from anywhere. I'm trying to tell you that. They are not coming from anywhere. But if they're genetic, they're inherited from somebody. Yes, he tells me, but it does not come from anywhere, Yanni. This is what it means, it is genetic. So what does genetic mean? It means you have genes. That is because you are Arab, or maybe like these people, and he's pointing to some Filipinos. And so I said, the Filipinos are genetic. So the two men at the table could see I was confused, and they start getting frustrated. Don't you know that Arabs have these genes, and that British people have these genes, and all these people have these genes? One of them is yelling at me. He means different genes, his colleague explains. Yeah, different genes, all these people. So I said, I understand that, but where do these genes come from? But they aren't coming from anywhere. It's because they are these people. So we are Arab, so we have some of these ones. And so I said, is Arab genetic then? He said, yes, of course. And it's like you're coming here from England. So I'm not English, as you probably tell, but they don't know. So that's what we're trying to tell you. So I said, is being Emirati genetic? So this provided some thinking. After a short time, they answered, no, this one's not genetic. This is coming who your father is. So I continued this debate with them for some time. I asked about skin, comes from the mother. Height, comes from the father. Obesity is genetic. Cancer is genetic. Eyes come from the mother. Gender, they come from the father. So I continued these questions with many people all over the Emirates and Oman throughout my fieldwork with more or less the same responses. Diabetes, cancer, misbehaving children, obesity, smoking habits, and both psychotic and non-psychotic mental illness. These conditions and behaviors were perceived to be genetic, while nationality, general behavior, and the phenotypic attributes of appearance were said to originate with parents. So almost done.
Time is up.
So my observations in the simplest of terms is that the consequences for the personal habits of the Emirati, certain Emiratis, lead to type 2 diabetes, regardless of genetic influence, but this hits too close to home for many people. Genes as ambiguous entities cannot offend. They force reflexivity away from the encompassing the social self and instead direct reflexive energy towards an already Islamically and culturally established cosmological self within nature. It is the ambiguous mundane entity made sacred. So, in conclusion, researchers have very successfully identified genetic susceptibility of disease within the Arab genome, but rather than encourage more responsible behavior from many locals, genetics are understood to be evidence-based that one should not alter their habits, because there's nothing that can be done about their condition anyway. The rates among Arabs are higher. There's evidence that shows that the rates of diabetes skyrocket for any nationality in Dubai, including British expats. So there is something about Dubai society that causes type 2 diabetes, not just genetics. This is so far largely ignored. The indigenous cosmologies that pervade that region absorb the pieces of Western biomedical empiricism for which they already have a structural understanding. What we have provided is a biomedical language for the indigenous Gulf Arab to describe what he or she already knew. One of the best ways I can illustrate this is to point out that it took me some time when I spoke about a gene for diabetes.
John.
Okay. With some informants, they thought I was speaking about a gene. Oh, it's true. Those ambivalent entities that are an inherent part of the unseen world who can cause suffering to people, and yet nothing can be done to prevent them. Best not to worry about them. So the words sound even identical, jinn and gene. After some time, when I realized my blunder, I was really quite embarrassed, actually, and I tried apologizing to my informant that I'd been going on about genetics, and he thought I was talking about gene. So he just laughs at me. And he says, okay, I understand, it's not a problem. These ones are the same. So I'll end there, I guess.
It's a great point to end on.